Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons Monster Manual. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find therein, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In our last episode, we answered some listener mail, and we also dealt with the Q section of the Monster Manual, which, after all, contained just one monster, the Quazzet. Today, we're going to get started on R, and we're going to begin with the Rakshasa, and then we're going to do the Ram, Giant, and the Rat, Giant. But before we do any of those things, let's take the time to thank a new Patreon supporter. This is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's patron, you back at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my other show, Patron Deities, in which I do, for the Deities and Demigods book, what I'm doing for the Monster Manual, but a little bit more in depth. So thank you very much to James Bailey. Indeed, I should say, thank you very much to Monster Man Contest Grand Prize winner James Bailey. Coincidentally, we're also going to start by answering some listener mail, and our listener mail comes from James Bailey. In fact, it was going to be in the listener mailbag special, but I forgot to do it because it was on Facebook and not in my email account. My bad. So James had some comments in response to the episode with the nymph in it, and he says, thought on nymph-type spirits and how to make them interesting. One thing occurs to me is that the benevolence and healing aspect of creatures like that could pose a challenge for players in cases where the nymph doesn't necessarily click with the player's cause as the good guy one, either through incomplete information or just seeing the world differently. So the incomplete information version could be done by, for example, having a human paramour who's very nice to the nymph but is actually a bit of an evil overlord. The different moral perspective could also be a compelling one. So, like, you're tracking the vicious, crazed griffin or giant bear or monster into the woods, and its lair is next to a nymph's pool. As far as you're concerned, you're hunting down a dangerous man-eating beast. But as far as the nymph is concerned, she may not really morally differentiate between sapient and non-sapient beings, and a bunch of thugs with swords just turned up and harmed what's basically innocent wildlife. So unless you can convince her otherwise, suddenly you're fighting a wild animal that has a powerful support and blessings caster healing it up all the time. And yeah, I think that's a really good point. One of the things that we've sort of struggled with is, at least my D&D games tend to have parties that are, if not uniformly good, at least, you know, roughly speaking, on the side of the angels. So it's easy to get into conflicts with people who are more evil than you are, but surprisingly difficult to get into conflicts with people who are more good, or better, I suppose would be the term, than you, unless you are quite bad indeed. Typically, if we're in a D&D-type fantasy world, there are a lot of very evil people around. So for the most part, people who are very good don't go around roughing up people who are just a little bit less good than them, because there's so many evil people to rough up. So, yeah, finding ways to make monsters who are, I mean, I don't even know if nymphs are good aligned off the top of my head, but they're kind of caring, nurturing types. Although they do make you go blind. But they don't mean to do it, it just kind of happens. So yeah, I think, again, if you want to make those kinds of monsters work, you have to think a little bit about the context. Fair point. Okay, so our first monster for this episode is the Rakshasa. Now, I looked at the official Dungeons & Dragons pronunciation guide, and it says that it's pronounced Rakshasa. But I also looked up some videos of people talking about these creatures in Hindu and Buddhist mythology, and they say Rakshasa. Now, I don't speak Sanskrit, so you tell me which one is correct, but I'm going with Rakshasa. Okay, so the Rakshas. The masculine form is Rakshas, the feminine is Rakshasi, or Rakshasi, I guess, and they are basically cannibal demons, or not cannibals, because they're not humans, but they're man-eating demons. And their name may come from a word that means to be guarded against, so the ones who are to be guarded against, or something like that. And they are a hungry bunch. In one version of their origin story, when the universe was created, they began to eat Brahma, and as a result, they were cast out of his presence and exiled to Earth. And Rakshas turn up as baddies in a bunch of different Hindu myths and Hindu epics. And they also appear in Buddhist teachings, and they're sometimes considered to be interchangeable with another type of demon, the Asura. In fact, one of Buddha's followers was a Rakshasa, which is a point that I'll be returning to later. Now, typically, your Rakshasa is depicted as very much kind of like what an Oni looks like. So sort of a wild creature with glaring red eyes, big fangs or tusks, you know, long, sharp claws, wild hair, that sort of thing. They really look kind of like an ogre or another sort of grotesque human type, and not at all like the creature that appears here in the Monster Manual. But the Rakshas is also said to have powers of illusion, and there are lots of stories about them trying to lure unwary travelers away to be gobbled up by appearing to them in the form of a beautiful woman or their old granny or traveler in need of aid or something like that. So it is possible, in fact, that the Rakshas here in this illustration is just what this particular one happens to look like. It doesn't say anywhere in the description that a Rakshas is a kind of Tiger Man. So why did the Tiger Man image become the dominant one of the Rakshas? I think it's because this illustration, once again by Dave Trompier, looks amazing. The Rakshasa is a tiger-headed man, kind of a Mr. Talky-Tawny type. He's chilling out in his wizard lair in, you know, a sort of robe or smoking jacket, wearing a cravat, smoking a pipe, and examining a ring with an attitude of relaxed contemplation. That's a fantastic villain pose. He definitely comes off as kind of an evil mastermind. I gotta say that, broadly speaking, the Rakshasa, as they appear in Hindu mythology, are not what you would call evil masterminds. Probably the most famous Rakshasa is Ravana, who is the king of Lanka and the main baddie of the Hindu epic, the Ramayana. And he is, mastermind is not the what would come to me to describe him. And certainly his minions, who I also take to be Rakshasa, are even sillier than he is. What's interesting about him is that here we are told that the Rakshasa are lawful evil, but they're not all. In fact, Ravana has a brother, a fella named Vibhishana, who is a good Rakshasa, and who tells Ravana to give it up and stop trying to fight Rama, and in the end, he goes over and actually fights on Rama's side. So we have a sort of a more nuanced picture of what the Rakshasa can be like. And like I said, one of them became a follower of the Buddha. So there is that thing specifically of kind of demons being redeemed, you know, in Buddhist tales. It's kind of an interesting one, actually. It comes up a fair amount. You've seen The Journey to the West, obviously. So anyway, other than the appearance, the Rakshasa, as we see it in the Monster Manual, is kind of more or less the creature from Hindu mythology. It's, a cannibal spirit in a physical form, and it has lots of powers of illusion, which it uses to lure people to their doom. And their status as sophisticated mega villains really comes from this stylish illustration, and they kind of adopted this cool Tiger Man persona, and they've never really looked back. Interesting too. I mean, I guess a tiger because they're from India, but I'll allow it. The Rakshasa have a great, rich mythological heritage and a cool illustration, and they're powerful and versatile monsters. All in all, top notch. Next, we got the Ram, Giant. Now, I have not seen The Hobbit Battle of the Five Armies. It was on my Netflix list, and then I think it went off Netflix. I don't know. Anyway, my understanding is that in The Hobbit Battle of the Five Armies, dwarfs ride on the back of giant rams. Now, you may have your own opinion about this as an adaptation of Tolkien's beloved classic, but dwarfs riding on the back of giant rams is pretty great. In fact, rams are a highly underrated wildlife encounter, giant or otherwise. I think of a ram as the kind of animal that would chase an old-timey prospector, and I am on record as stating that anything that makes your Dungeons & Dragons character more like an old-timey prospector is good. Rams are a symbol of strength and power that we don't think about very much these days, even though, you know, our word for to collide forcefully with something is to ram it. But you don't see it very often. There are some exceptions. Again, I've used Glorantha examples before, and in Glorantha, the war god of the Lunar Empire is Yanafal Tarnil's ram and warrior, and one of his abilities is the charge of the ram, where his devotees just call on their god to empower them with his might and just charge right into people and knock them over. Yeah, I'm strongly in favor of rams. They don't necessarily have to be ridden on by dwarfs. They could be ridden on by all kinds of mischievous, tricksy creatures. I mean, imagine, like, some kind of tricky sprite that's got, you know, enlarge, reduce, and turns your regular ram that's just been sitting there munching grass into a giant ram and then rides it around the village causing mayhem. I mean, that would be fun. And of course, they genuinely are, or can be, aggressive and territorial, although I believe ram actual headbutting is largely confined to, you know, dominance struggles for mating rights or whatever. But anyway, Ram, Comet Giant, pretty good monster. It only works in certain contexts, but those contexts are a lot of fun. And finally, we come to a dungeon classic, the Rat, Comma, Giant. You're not in a dungeon if you're not fighting giant rats. But specifically, this is the Rat, Comma, Giant Sumatran. Now, as you may know, the giant rat of Sumatra is a Sherlock Holmes reference. It comes from a line in The Adventure of the Sussex Vampire, in which, in a conversation about something else, Holmes says, that was connected to the affair of the giant rat of Sumatra. And he says, quote, "A story for which the world is not yet prepared," close quotes. I mean, that's a great line. Apparently, there are actually some pretty big rats in Sumatra, but I don't think they're this kind of thing. I'm of two minds about the giant rat. On the one hand, giant rats are past the point of cliche. They are, even more than goblins, the hokiest level 1 fantasy adventure monster. But at the same time, there is something far more horrible about being mauled by giant rats than by any other who cares half of a hit dice fodder. The giant rat combines the fantastic and the gothic. It's the kind of thing that scurries around ruined old castles and crypts. It has the aspects of a horror monster in a way that a goblin or a kobold doesn't. So I think it has a role to play in Dungeons & Dragons, and no matter how cliche we find, you know, fighting rats in a sewer, I think with the right description, you can make the experience of fighting rats in a sewer pretty horrible. So that is it for this episode. We've had three really strong monsters. The Rakshasa, a powerful, versatile, colorful opponent with a great illustration and a fantastic mythological background. The Ram, Comma Giant, an underrated mount and a fun wilderness encounter. And the Rat, Comma Giant, Sumatran, which, despite some of its cliche status, in my mind, is still a classic. So join me next time as we move further through the R section, and we look at the Ray, the Remorhaz, if that's how you pronounce it, and maybe the Rhinoceros on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the Deities and Demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.